This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Welcome back in. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back alongside Mike Pritchard, who's already fired on this week one opening night game, Bills and Rams. I'm Ben Wilson. We're in here every single Tuesday for Patrick and Michael. And it's time to get into some player props, Pritch, because as we discuss the side and the total for this first game, we've seen now the market start to develop some early movement on a couple of these props and want to get your thoughts on especially how you view these two quarterbacks coming out right out of the gates and how we view the running back and wide receiver markets with so many injuries, especially. It seems like we have more injuries coming into this week one. I don't know if that's just a me thing and it's just in a vacuum, but it seems like there's a lot of guys in these teams, even with the shortened preseason, that are banged up in general, and that's obviously shaping the player prop markets this time around.
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. I mean, it's a physical game. We all know that, and you try to survive to the regular season as a player. I think, for the most part, both teams are healthy. There's some bumps and bruises along the way, which is going to happen, but can you manage that? And the Rams have said they're going to have to manage that with Stafford all year long. Mm-hmm. So I look for Stafford with injections and help that he'll be ready to go, and he'll be good to go for this week one opponent on Buffalo in a couple days here. Buffalo, you know, with Josh Allen, you asked a question about quarterbacks. I just love and I respect his story, his path. I mean, wasn't recruited, right? Inland kind of guy in California, Inland Empire, that kind of guy. And, you know, he worked his way to a situation, junior college. Okay, you're sending out a letter asking for an offer for Division I schools. You get one, it's Wyoming. And then, I don't know, you get drafted to Buffalo, which was perfect for him. But yet he doesn't rest on his laurels. He doesn't stop there. I mean, he's motivated, right? And he seeks out help on how to be more accurate as a passer. He gets Palmer, quarterback guru, if you will, and he continues to get better and work hard in offseason. That's all you hear about this guy. Mm-hmm. That's all you hear. It's like he got the big money, got the big contract, and then still, what did you see at the end of that Kansas City game? The guy was just sitting there. Like, man, how close did we get right there? So he's highly motivated as a player, and he's gotten better each and every year. I think he's still ascending. That's why I'm so high on Buffalo this year, because of that key position quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's going to help because no more Dable. And now you got Josh Allen going in year five, and year five for quarterbacks, this is my offense now. They're not changing the playbook. How can we make it better? What else can we do? We've added personnel a little bit. We think McKenzie and Davis, you know, that's a good combination to help out with Diggs, strengthen our offensive line, and still we're going to run and have the concepts involving six eligibles, including Josh Allen. Josh Allen as a runner is incredible. If you think about the total offensive production just off last year, 57 total offensive touchdowns. Josh Allen accounted for 42 of them, rushing and passing. So he's just an exciting player And again, I think a motivated player with a lot of upside. So I like that to begin the year with Buffalo. And from a player prop standpoint, I mean, that secondary outside of Jalen Ramsey, I think for the Rams could be challenged.
And it's funny, too, with Allen, even with the progressions, leaned more on the legs a season ago, picked up about 15 or so yards more per game on the ground. It was at about the 45 or so yards per game mark, which kind of is then baked into the actual number here on the passing yards prop, which you see 276.5 for Allen, averaged about 259 a season ago. Mm-hmm. So you're certainly baking in, as you talk about, Mike, more progression, and you're also baking in him being as much, if not more, of a focal point of the offense as he was under Brian Dable, where now, even with that transition, they are letting him call the shots a little bit more with that trust now in the offensive system. It's just, would you have enough conviction, at least on an over for passing yards, knowing his mobility, knowing how he's able to create and pick up yards on the ground? That's where, to me, it gets tough on the passing yardage prop, because he could still be really, really efficient. You just laid out all the touchdown numbers and yet still only throw for 250, 260 yards a game. And it really isn't a profitable thing long term. It definitely has that feel, at least in the market, like you are paying a tax for a game that is presumed to be very high scoring. And that's also, you know, you look at the passing attempts. You're at 35.5. He averaged about 38 attempts per game a season ago. So you're asking for more passing yards on, at least in the market, fewer passing attempts. You just have to keep that in mind as a bettor, right? Because you're asking for more big plays. And as you say, it's certainly possible. I just don't know how much I'd be willing to think, all right, Allen could certainly pick up a bunch of yards on the ground in a spot like this, knowing the mobility there, knowing how good that secondary is, at least with Ramsey.
Right.
But you certainly, you're at least believing long-term it's going to be a huge year.
Well, yeah. I mean, last year in particular, with all those numbers you mentioned, so they threw the ball 59% of the time. And so you're at that 60-40 pass-run ratio as an offense. Not quite there. You know, in comparison and context, Brady was 66%. Think about the amount of attempts and passes that Brady threw. But I think Josh Allen certainly was efficient, very efficient at the times that he did throw it. But with the emergence of Gabe, and then certainly you think about Diggs, Isaiah McKenzie. I mean, the backfield too. Duke Johnson didn't even make that team. It's like with six eligibles, the opportunities are going to be there for yards, though. And I don't see this offense being conservative. So from a player prop standpoint, yeah, I mean, it's lofty. And then the opponent, too. I think when you incorporate six eligibles like Buffalo wants to do, are you going to see more man-to-man coverages, therefore mm-hmm. bigger plays? If you see zone, you have a quarterback that can take advantage of the zone with his eyes. He manipulates safeties. He manipulates linebackers with his eyes, with his throw fakes in the pocket. And to me, that's the elevation of Josh Allen that people aren't talking about.
And 37.5 is the rushing yards, for what it's worth, just laid out, was in that 44 range a season ago. And so you talk about evolution. It's funny, at least on the Stafford side. I said last segment, I don't know how you could have any conviction in betting any of these Stafford props when we don't know, and we are not going to know definitively until we actually see him on the field. It is interesting, though, at least on the passing attempts, because that was the big storyline of, oh, yeah, he could be good to throw 55 times a game. You see it at 36.5, which means you would just naturally assume, Mike, that's probably a big tick down from last year, because just you're baking in, there's been the injury, they probably want to, you know, just alleviate those issues and work him into the game. But if you look at the numbers, he averaged only about 35.5 pass attempts per game last year. So you're at 36.5. That's the one where I look at in the unders juice to the plus side at plus 100. If you felt one way or the other, and you certainly have your doubts, that to me is the angle you look at with a guy like Stafford, where you take out some of the catch and run potential that his receivers have, which could inflate the passing yards, because under 36.5 would still be about average for what he did a season ago. It's more dependent on game state, as we know, in a matchup like this with a higher total. But that's the one that sticks out to me on his side. Not that I would get involved with the Stafford props, but it is an interesting conversation to have when we don't think he'll be throwing 50 times, especially week one.
Right. We don't know. One of the things and one of the factors the Rams had in their favor as they got hot last year is they started to run the football. Cam Akers comes back, but they started to run the football in the playoffs. We saw that, the toughness angle. Stafford, too, the arm slot, the arm angles that he threw the ball with last year, you wonder if that's going to be compromised this year because of the elbow. Like, remember the sidearm throw to Cooper and everything like that? Okay, with injections, maybe he won't be compromised, right? I mean, you do have to factor that in, I believe. But the matchups, though, I mean, say Buffalo with those two safeties, Hyde and Poyer, and Cooper Kupp as good as he is, but yet they have a sound plan with those two safeties. Who could cover either one of them, along with now Von Miller going up against Noteboom, I believe, who's going to be tackled, was unproven, a question mark right there. And then you're replacing a free agent guard, a young player up front as well. So they're going to be challenged in addition to what Stafford is going to be going through too. So obviously I think the Rams are going to want to run the ball more because the matchups suggest to me that it favors Buffalo, even with a rookie corner, because of who they have in their front from a personnel standpoint.
Like I was saying earlier, the matchup I really want to see earlier, where how much will the safeties kind of make up for the inexperience and youth on the outsides there for Buffalo, at least in game one. And as that ties into the receiving props, that's where really we have the injuries playing a factor. Isaiah McKenzie is a firm questionable coming in. They have at least leaned towards him being able to give it a go, but he's not included yet in any of the props you're seeing. Same goes for Van Jefferson, who is much more of a firm questionable, his status very much up in the air. As you look at this, we had Will Hill on last segment thinking Allen Robinson is going to benefit greatly on the Rams side, up now to 62.5 from 59.5. How do you think on the Buffalo side this ends up raising the distribution? Let's say McKenzie is good to go, but it's not necessarily like we think he's less than 100% regardless.
Yeah.
So are you thinking that would play into your thought? If you look at, say, a Diggs or a Davis, two guys you're really, really high on.
Yeah.
70.5 right now for Diggs, 57.5 for Davis. Is the injury, even though it's not considered significant for McKenzie, is that enough to make you lean to an over on either or if not both of those guys?
Yeah, because you would look and factor in more targets. I mean, look at Knox, too, at tight end. That guy was a red zone machine last year. But the ability and playmaking ability for Josh Allen. We know that he moves around the pocket. We know that he buys time around. He'll scramble. They've incorporated the big play, the scramble drill, just like you see with Kansas City. And but the timing and rhythm and accuracy has improved so much with Josh Allen, too, that he's got a lot of confidence in throwing the ball into windows. I think the matchups on the outside is going to be very interesting. Jalen Ramsey, is he going to play inside this year, or is he going to go back outside? Mm-hmm. Last year he played inside because of necessity. I think the Rams secondary got exposed a little bit to the tune of adding Eric Weddle along the way. But, it'll be interesting from a matchup standpoint. If you like some props, certainly Diggs, take a shot at that. Certainly. I mean, the guy, Gabe Davis, too. I mean, my goodness. He has emerged into a playmaker. And just look at the playoff game and his route running. And the fact that they can move him around and open him up to inside or outside, I think it's a tremendous asset right there, right, for Buffalo.
And then, look, you have Cooper Kupp coming off the triple crown. Right. Was at about 115 yards a game, 93.5 for most players. You look at that and you say, wow, that is an insanely high number. Is there any possible way you could have conviction either side on that? Where, again, if you really want to bet an under on Kupp, that's a tough bet to sweat.
Right.
Whereas we know as has been well documented, there is the quarterback issue that he's going to be playing with. It's just 93.5. You're getting a discount,
that's,
but it's also how much do you trust against? Again, pretty big question marks in the secondary for Buffalo.
Sure. Well, from a safety standpoint, if Kupp's going to be inside, now you're talking about linebackers and safeties, and they're oversized at linebacker with Edmonds, and those safeties are extraordinary. But Dawson Knox, 3.5 receptions.
Three?
Maybe play looking over that.
Right. I see where Mike's going. Bills -2. Dawson Knox over 3.5 receptions. Still much more on the Week 1 discussion to have. We'll also look at some of the marquee matchups in college football Week 2 when we return.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Back on the show, the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM with Mike Pritchard. I'm Ben Wilson, our Tuesday crew. Excited to welcome in Josh Applebaum in a little bit. That'll be a nice little reunion. The former
reunion
guys.
Yeah.
All hanging out here at our Circa Sportsbook Studios in downtown Las Vegas. And we'll get back to more NFL discussion here Week 1. In the meantime, though, we talked some college football line moves, how these Week 2 numbers are starting to take shape in the market. And for Week 2, we've got some very big-time marquee matchups. The one bigger line move that we didn't get to earlier, I want to get your take on. It's Florida seeing the big move on Anthony Richardson, who had the tremendous 3-touchdown rushing performance in Week 1, leading his team to the upset home win over Utah, who was ranked 7th in the country in a popular college football playoff selection by many, many of our VSiN college football experts. So Florida opens, touchdown favorite against Kentucky, couple of 1-0 teams squaring off Week 2 here to open the SEC slate. But already we've seen a lot of movement here to Kentucky, down to 4.5, and you just wonder, is this kind of a one-game thing for Billy Napier in Florida, where we saw a lot of good out of the quarterback, but had to get some breaks, and there were some questionable play-calling decisions late by Utah that gave Florida the win. And you can understand why, with a lot of people high on Mark Stoops in Kentucky this year as a top 25 team, as opposed to Florida, who's unranked, you could see why this number has come down a little bit. I'm just surprised to see it come down so sharply, so quickly, down to 4.5.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, too. I mean, you factor in letdown. You factor in Florida getting up for that game against Utah. Obviously, you're going to be ranked in the top 10. And, okay, you get that win at home. Did Utah lose it? Go back to that question. Did they lose it, or did Florida win it? I mean, you can make a combination or a case for both. But I think letdown is real because of emotions in college football. You're still talking about kids. And younger players. And so that's part of my cap in this situation. Then you think about motivation too. So Florida, do they want to be knocked off again by Kentucky? You know, and that kind of thing. You know, certainly after the win against Utah, you're feeling pretty good about your season and what could present yourselves for your season. If you're Florida, you have to avoid the letdown. So from a coaching standpoint, they're going to have to convey that and certainly try to get that out of the troops this week. Rich Scangarello, interesting that he's over there calling plays now. He was a San Francisco guy, then Denver coordinator. I know what he wants to run. Got a decent quarterback, but certainly going to want to run that football. And you think about how many people have inquired about how San Francisco, in particular, that team runs the football, that wide zone. How many teams are doing that in the pros, and how many teams are doing that in the National Football League? Right. It's incredible. And so it's an interesting cap here, interesting matchup. I mean, you're catching points. And if you like a letdown angle, you know, Kentucky could be a solid play here.
It's just interesting. Like, can you really have a letdown when it's your first conference game and especially a big SEC matchup like this, too? That's what I wonder. And you think, yes, no doubt you will come off of that first game. Yeah. And there's a lot of emotions involved for especially a new coach making his debut, new offensive coordinator and all that for Florida. The matchup that fascinates me, though, you look at the Kentucky running game. And even though it's hard to a lot of times get many takeaways when you face a weaker team, but at least faced a legit MAC opponent in Miami of Ohio, who, look, at least played with Kentucky for a good amount of the first half. I mean, that was a 13-10 right. game at the half. Miami at least covering the first half line there. Kentucky wins 37-13. Big game from Will Levis. You expected him to put up big numbers, 21 of 32 for 303 yards. But the offensive ground game was really non-existent. They only averaged 1.9 yards per carry. And when you think about how well the Florida defense stifled, just in general, Cameron Rising limited him to just 216 yards through the air, 6.8 yards per attempt. At the same time, they gave up nearly 6 yards per carry on the ground. And that was where you felt like Utah had a big advantage, over 230 rushing yards overall. So that's my question. How does Kentucky's ground game, that was non-existent against a pretty mediocre MAC team in week one, square off against a Florida rushing defense that was gashed tooth and nail pretty much time and again? And if you're betting Kentucky, you got to be thinking the balance will be a little bit more to the middle than what we saw Levis just airing it out so many times last
week. Yeah,
it's
possible, Ben. I mean, I think from a player's perspective here, the run game is all about attitude. It really is. I mean, do I want to go in there and put my headgear in there and block somebody? Do I want to be physical? There's valid questions about Florida. Maybe that's why they made a coaching change in terms of the lack of toughness. Now, you got great athletes. There's no argument about athletes down there with Florida and the Gators. But from a toughness aspect in the trenches, there was some question marks. There have been questions. And so now if you're Kentucky, you have to rev up the running game, obviously, right? I mean, you're looking at tape and maybe an opportunity right there against Florida. That's how you're going to win the game. That's certainly how you're going to avoid Richardson making some big plays against you, hopefully. But, you know, Kentucky, I think their path to success this year is going to be creative running a game, you know, take advantage of some ability from the quarterback too. But no, it's a toughness, it's an attitude. And that's why I think the letdown could be real, because in college, I don't know if these kids, well, I'm not going to say I don't know. I know these kids.
You played. You could.
Yeah,
yeah. You've been there.
I've been there. It is tough to manage week to week. And we see that in pros too, being able to avoid the letdown spots. But I think in college, the tendency to have a letdown is certainly prevalent, more prevalent than what we would see in a National Football League. Just, you got a new coach. There's there's dynamics in play here that his messages and certainly capturing the attention of the players say, look, you got to forget about that Utah game. We got a big game in front of us. You know, when is that going to happen? And how are we going to tell that that's going to happen? Maybe follow some insiders from a mindset standpoint. But no, I think the letdown angle is real in this matchup against Kentucky.
Be fascinating to see where that line gets back down to as well, from 7 Florida opening as the home favorites down to 4.5 at this point. Kentucky catching some of the money, 51.5 your total in that big SEC matchup. There's another team in the SEC I want to talk about. We've already discussed Alabama. We talked about these two. But how about Tennessee, another team in the East who could be, look, you talk about dark horses for maybe that silver medal, right, behind Georgia with how good the Bulldogs look. Tennessee goes out. They lead 38-0 at the half against Ball State as huge favorites. Roll to a 59-10 win. Hendon Hooker, 18-25, 221 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. They now go on the road, taking on a Pitt team who looked far from convincing in a eventual comeback late fourth quarter rallying win, although they did not cover. 7-point win for the Panthers in week one against West Virginia is 8-point closing favorites. Tennessee getting all the money here from 4.5 up to 6.5 or 7. I get that we now have more data too, right, on a team like Pitt who looked really, really uncomfortable for big stretches against a perceived mediocre Big 12 team in West Virginia. Are you believing that that was a harbinger of things to come on the pit side, or was that more of just kind of a rock fight classic rivalry game that's always going to bring out the worst in respective teams when you think about how competitive those generally are? Because you could kind of go either way if you look at the evaluation from week one. I certainly know where I'm going,
because
I wasn't impressed with Pitt, but there's probably an argument to be made on both sides. What do you think?
Well, I think so. I mean, the atmosphere was so electric out there in Pitt, at Pitt, for their stadium, for the game. You know, backyard brawl. I don't care what people say. Kids get educated and they catch up fast on rivalries, whether or not they were teenagers or whether or not they were little guys when they last met. I mean, the alumni, the boosters, everybody around them, student body, will tell you that this is a rivalry game. This game means a lot to us. So that message will be received. But this is going to be different. I mean, Tennessee, was one of those programs that have just been missing a quarterback, I think. I mean, they're going to be talented. They have a lot of pride in that program. And you think about the alumni and what they want established with the Volunteers. And maybe they found a guy, a solid quarterback that they can lean on, certainly. And, you know, you think about who's coaching them and what they want to do. It's going to be a tough task, I think, for Pitt. I think Pitt was overrated. I don't think they're the type of program. We know they're just going to pound the rock, right? And that's right up the alley of a team in the SEC from a toughness standpoint. Are they dynamic enough to throw it? Can they be prolific against Tennessee? I don't think so, right? At least that's from my capping standpoint. But Tennessee, if they got it going with quarterback, I think they're a solid team this year.
And we were also wondering, too, without Mark Whipple having left the offensive coordinator going to Nebraska, how quickly would a new Keaton Slovis-led offense at quarterback look? Even though the numbers were solid, 16 to 24, 308 yards through the air, and a touchdown, nearly 13 yards per attempt. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, were you sold in one 60-minute sample size on Pitt? Because you probably would have to be if you were making a case to take the points, at least now that you're getting a touchdown with Pitt.
Well, think about it this way. If JT Daniels had a stronger arm, I'm not so sure Pitt wins this game, right? I mean, it goes to overtime perhaps, but, you know, a strong arm throw from tying that thing really late in the game. But injuries, too, could be adding up for Pitt, the Panthers, and I think you need to be full strength against a team like Tennessee from the SEC.
Well, that's also like you get used to assigning different monikers for these teams. And Tennessee's been so down now, but with Josh Heupel, you feel like there's definitely a turn in momentum with that overall program. Not that I'm going to say just because you beat Ball State by 49 at home, you're turning the corner, but it's been building from last year. Think about what Heupel did at UCF as well in his short time there as head coach. It's a rare spot where, even though I think a lot of general public would say, I'm not ready to trust Tennessee on the road against another Power 5. I don't know. Up to 7. I don't know that that's a bad play at all. Tennessee, I think you can kind of – is that weird to say? You can kind of trust them? I don't know. Anyway, Josh Applebaum, he's going to join us next here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now's the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and pro guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up early, and for a discount of $175, you'll receive both guides and full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl, or join us for $40 a month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. We're back on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, your Tuesday crew from the Circus Sportsbook Studios. I'm Ben Wilson with Mike Pritchard. Give him a follow at MI Pritchard, because he's got a whole lot of plays already. Mike, we're going to talk teasers next segment, because I want to know what the other side of your you already said San Francisco. You're bringing them down to one there on the road for week number one. So what does Mike Pritchard have on the week one card? Speaking of week one, Josh Applebaum, our good pal, frequent guest here on the Lombardi Line, joins the show right now. He's also host of a new podcast here at VSiN, the VSiN Daily Morning Bet. So Josh, you're waking up early now. You're getting out content right away here. In addition to the Market Insights podcast, tell us about the new show that you have going on here. I understand that thing is now active and launched here this week.
Yeah, today was the debut, Ben. And Pritch, it's great to see you, and really excited about this, guys, because I think there's an opening in the market for when you wake up, just quickly tell me, what are the biggest games that day? What are the biggest line moves? What do you need to know as a bettor? in terms of not only the biggest games in terms of popularity, but injuries to monitor, betting system matches. So really excited about this. It dropped today for the first time. So it's not as, you know, as long as the Market Insights pod, I'll still be doing that in the afternoon. That's really my kind of in-depth look at the market, about, you know, 30 to 35, 40 minutes in general. This morning bets pod, it's just wake up. What do I need to know about today? What are some interesting line moves? And I think if you're like waking up and, you know, you got to jump in your car and go to work or get on the train, whatever you got to do, you throw this on, you can have some coffee, you wake up, get your brain thinking about betting each day. So you can look forward to it every Monday to Friday, and no rest for the weary. No, you know, no sleep for this guy over here. We're going 24/7. It's NFL season. I'm very honored about this guy. He's very excited. So catch morning bets anywhere you find your podcast.
Nice.
You
know, no rest for the
week. Yeah, no rest. I mean, both ends of the candle, Josh Applebaum. I can appreciate that. And looking forward to this podcast, too, because doing a show with you for 2 years, I mean, your interpretation of the action, whether it's sharp line movement or just interpretation of lines, is so valuable. There's so many bettors that are looking for resources, right? I mean, we got subscribers signing up and getting our pro guides. And so I think your pod's going to be a great value in terms of waking up what's happening in the marketplace.
I think you're right. I hope so, Pritch. And I really appreciate that. And I think the other thing is, you know, you can do some work on your own. Like, you know, this is what I like to do. I look at the metamorphosis of a betting line. So first we get the overnight line when it first drops. So as I'm releasing this morning pod, you know, I'm giving to you what's been going on since it got released that night to, you know, 6 a.m. that following morning. But then you can kind of file it away and compare those morning bets numbers to later in the day. Is the line going, you know, in favor of the games we hit on early in the morning? To me, that's a really important thing. If you see that line continue to progress in one direction with no buyback, that's a good sign. So just kind of a little tip there. Compare that morning bets number to the current number. If it's moved in your direction from 6 a.m. to later in the afternoon, to me, that's a good sign that the money continues to flow in your favor.
Again, Josh Applebaum joining us right now. Give him a follow at Josh_insights there on the Twitter machine. So let's kind of put this to the test here, Josh, because we've had a whole lot of market movement as this market has been ground into shape now over the last few months, with week one lines having been out for some time here. We'll start with the Thursday night game, first game for us to bet on of the new season. And we've seen a little bit of money come back in now. Some shops back down to Bills -2 after getting as high as 2.5 in the market. What have you seen there with that? And is there a side you're looking at here, Bills and Rams, to open things up there Thursday night?
Yeah, I think, Ben, if you take a step back, like my number one system going into week one and really September overall, it kind of, you know, bodes pretty well the last few years, just betting dogs in general, but really leaning on these underdogs in week one in particular. If you remember last year, these dogs were 12-4 ATS in week one. You're like, okay, maybe they just had the dogs had their day last year. But no, if you look historically, they've been pretty good week one. And I think the thought process is, you know, really the public overvalues all summer long. They want to bet these favorites. They put too much stock into that. They dismiss a lot of these dogs. But remember, we don't care who wins. We just care about who covers. So if you look at week one dogs since 2016, they're 58% ATS. Now, to me, the important thing here, guys, is to kind of break up this game into two parts. Number one, you can't dispute the fact that the line is going to the Buffalo Bills. A lot of these opening numbers over the summer, you know, it got back and forth like Rams -1, Bills -1. Split the difference, called around a pick'em opener. Now we're up to Bills -2.5. So there has been money flowing on Buffalo, but I think this is a good opportunity to go against the grain, as Pritch and I always used to refer to it, put on the hazmat suit. I'm looking at the points here with the Rams, guys, because number one, primetime dogs. Last year, they were fantastic. They're around 56% over the last decade or so. They had a great year last year, but you're getting almost 70% of bets on Buffalo. They're your favorite to win the Super Bowl. They have your highest win total juiced up. Everyone wants to back this team. If you got them at around a pick 'em or maybe you money lined them early, you know, you're beating the closing line, you're probably feeling good about it. But I think at this point, all the value is looking at the Rams getting the points here. You also look at dogs who made the playoffs last year. They're around 57% against the spread the last 5 years. McVay's 9-6 as a dog in his career. But put it this way, everyone's betting Buffalo. The line has moved so much. I think the value's gone on Buffalo. I'd look at the Rams 2.5. And Ben, you're right. That 2.5 down to 2 at some books, that's really important. They're not going to the key number of 3. Might be coming back the other way. I'll take the points of the Rams, maybe a teaser play. We'll have to see if Pritch's teaser syndicate likes this one. But if you go 2.5 up to 8.5 with the Rams, you go through a couple key numbers there.
Yeah, the syndicate's going to be very active, Josh, in week one. let's get to another game, though, because I was at this game last year. It's the Vegas Raiders and the LA Chargers. And so from a home field advantage standpoint, I don't think there is any. Maybe to the side of the Raiders, perhaps, out there in LA, but yet they're a dog here on the road. It's interesting because being at this game last year, Josh, the shootout nature of the game and certainly the up and down nature of the game too, Curious if you're leaning towards the dog in this one. Not a road dog, but perhaps a home dog, even though the Chargers are going to be at home.
No, that's a great point by you, Pritch. Again, you don't have this real home field advantage here with the Chargers. So with Vegas, you know, it's not a long trip there. I think you're going to get a lot of, you know, silver and black of this game. But to me, even if you throw that aside, I like the movement here going to Vegas. So I'm looking at taking the points here too, Pritch. You know, the Chargers open this game at some shops laying 3.5. A couple shops even open -4 Chargers. Now we're showing 3.5 on our screen, but some of these books are actually down to 3. But I think it's important here, not only, you know, with this line movement to Vegas, but I think it's important also when to place your bet. Like a lot of these books that are at -3 right now with the Chargers, it's Chargers -3, -115, -120. So I think based on the juice price, if you're at a book at 3, maybe you want to go against this system with all these dogs. I think -3 is your best number here for the Chargers, but I'm looking at it through the prism of backing Vegas here. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to make sure I get a shop here, getting the hook there with the +3.5. And again, a lot of these matches, as well as a dog who made the playoffs last year, and another one I love, Pritch, we talked about this last year, short road dogs +6 or less. That was around 62% against the spread last year. Lines going to Vegas. I just think you got to get the 3.5 or better. Mm-hmm. I'll take the points there with the Raiders.
Continuing our week one NFL deep dive with Josh Applebaum here on the Lombardi Line. We all remember last year, Buffalo was a big survivor team, a big teaser team, and they lose outright as 6.5-point favorites at home to Pittsburgh. You have the Steelers in a very different scenario, now getting 6.5 once again on the road against Cincinnati there. And I know this is a game you're looking to target there, Josh, and a specific angle does stand out to you.
Yeah, kind of same thing here, guys. This is one of the dogs that, to me, you have a lot of system matches on. You're in a really good contrarian spot. And you got a couple good angles, as well as Mike Tomlin as a dog, who's been great in his career. Tomlin as a dog in his career, I think he's like 45-23 against the spread, 66%. When he gets points, it's usually a good idea to take those points. But to me, this is an ultimate line freeze play, because if you look at the Cincinnati Bengals at home, they opened laying 6.5, you know, way back early in the summer. They haven't moved off 6.5. And that's critical to me, because across the market, you look at DraftKings, BetMGM, like 70% of bets are laying the points here with the Steelers, laying the points here with Cincinnati. So if Cincinnati is this big, you know, up and coming team, they went to the Super Bowl, you know, Burrow, Chase, everyone wants to take them in this spot. Why aren't they up to -7 if they're getting 7 out of 10 bets? That tells me that the books are kind of reluctant. They're unwilling to go to the key number of 7 because they don't want to give out a +7 to contrarian bettors going with Pittsburgh here. So that's curious. I think this is an important game to monitor. If you see, you know, closer to Sunday, that 6.5 with Pittsburgh get juiced up, like it may get down to 6. That's what you really want to look for if you're going to back the Steelers here. But one more thing, guys, divisional dogs, you know, week one dogs have been great, but week one divisional dogs, they're 22-8 against the spread, like 73% here over the last 4 or 5 years. So that would match with Pittsburgh. Can they win the game? I don't know, but I'll take those points. Maybe it's a field goal game.
You know, Josh, about 40 seconds here. I mean, they're going to go against your guy, Tom Brady. A lot of noise about him, but the Dallas Cowboys in a home dog situation, though.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Cowboys are in a good teaser play too, Pritch, but this would match as a, you know, primetime dogs, which have been great. Still Tom Brady, despite the worry and, you know, that win total being juiced up under, they're getting like 65% of bets in this primetime spot. So they open laying 2. They're up to around 2.5 now. To me, if you take the teaser play with the Rams up to 8.5 and the Cowboys up to 8.5, that would be my favorite teaser this upcoming weekend.
All right, Josh Applebaum at Josh _insights. Congrats on the new show. It'll be great for us to check out especially as we wake up here bright and early in Nevada. So congrats on that, man. I know we'll get to see you every single Tuesday here on the Lombardi Line, Josh, and best of luck here with the week one plays as well.
Ben Pritch, you guys are the best. Look forward to talking to you every Tuesday this football season.
Absolutely. Right. Cannot wait for more of our deep dives with people like Josh Applebaum. You know, Pritch, we have all of those. Check out VSiN.com/subscribe. VSiN Pro subscriptions. All of those deep dives are available there, as well as all of Josh's plays. He's got some baseball in our daily pick spreadsheet as well. All right, on the other side, we wrap up the show. We look at some of the week one games standing out to one Mike Pritchard next on the Lombardi Line.
What's the guarantee?
What's the guarantee?
Hey, Derek! What's the guarantee?
The biggest pro football contests in Vegas are back. With 12 million in guaranteed prizes, there's two ways to win, and there's no rake. The Circa Sports Millions, with quarterly payouts and 100% payback.
Play Circa Survivor. Select one team each week with no point spreads. Take in the big cash with 12 million in guaranteed prizes.
You're listening. listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we welcome you back to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, it's the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. VSiN Big Bets coming up next at our South Point Sportsbook Studios with Dave Ross and Amal Shah. For now, though, Mike, what I've been waiting for all show, especially once you teased us with a little first teaser, like, because I know you do like San Francisco, teasing them down, as we talked about earlier, against Chicago this week. Just your general strategy, you play a lot of teasers, you've had a lot of success with that, and looking for different angles here as we just refresh everybody getting ready here for week one of the NFL season. What to look for, what spots to play, and what you specifically like to hone in on just in general.
Well, there's some big line movement we're going to get to, too. But in terms of for my big game coming up week one, but my teaser parameters, along with the syndicate, really the syndicate is, you know, you got the key numbers. Everybody knows about the key numbers that you want to go through. I have looked at home dog situations in terms of teasing them up if I can find them. But I also got to find that with a home field advantage. You think about a big dog situation for Seattle, Monday Night Football, right? The home field advantage that they're going to have against a quarterback on a new roster, new team, new head coach as well. And so you can get that thing up to 12.5 points right now if you like that. Josh mentioned Dallas as a teaser situation against Tom Brady. A lot of baggage going on right there. But I don't think Dallas has a distinct home field advantage. You can look at Atlanta, too, from a distinct home field advantage. They don't have one. That's a rivalry game. I played in that game. There could be half the stadium filled with Saints fans. So be careful with that. So, but, you know, typically my teasers are, you know, I'm looking at good teams, especially at home. If they are catching points, I would look for that. That would be my first priority to try to use on a teaser situation. But if teams don't have a good home field advantage, and then on the other side, dynamic play offensively, I can look at a good team that could be a road favorite, a heavy road favorite, and looking to tease them down. And so two stood out to me. One was the 49ers. Now, not in particular about the quarterback play, but because of the offense and what they want to get to with that offense and Trey Lance. And so I love the teaser situation against a roster depleted of talent out there in Chicago with no home field advantage. Mm-hmm. Right? And so even if it's a low-scoring game, I think the 49ers defense is potent enough to kind of help them keep in the game, stay in the game. And we'll see if Trey Lance makes mistakes or not. But running the football, hopefully he won't make mistakes, right? Yeah. And then the Ravens, you know, the great unknown with Lamar Jackson. The big reveal, I think this guy is going to evolve into a pocket passer. That's what his game needs to get to. And from, you know, you're talking to people and they say, you know what, he looks good. You know, he looks the part. So we'll see if that happens. I think he's got viable weapons around him to become a pocket passer. Does he have the discipline and the patience to stay in the pocket and be effective that way? Zero home field advantage, in my opinion, with the Jets, too. But I tease them down because it is a great unknown in week one.
And I think the good point, too, you make, it's not just the blind, oh, they're 7-point road favorites, so we're just going to naturally trust them. It's you want to see the multitude of factors come together. And, look, not all home dogs are created equal either. Some have very big flaws. That's why they are inherent home underdogs. But if you at least feel like you have some sort of confidence in them being able to move the football and that they are at least of the – and, you know, if we're being honest, there's not that many teams left that really have a home field advantage. So you do have to pick your spots. And we've seen how home field in the betting market has been reduced to probably now 2 points market-wide. Right. It's not the 3 it used to be, which is interesting. I'm sure it's – you know, you probably feel differently than when you played, when you watched these games where – it used to be the standard 3, and that's because it was really, really tough when you think about the travel and the atmospheres at a lot of those different stadiums in the past.
Well, I haven't played for both teams. I mean, I think Denver will have a home field advantage now, but go flip it. Like, I played in Seattle in the Kingdom when we did have a home field advantage. I couldn't even hear you this distance. Right, right.
That's great. Yeah.
So think about Russell Wilson with a new team, first live action in a game, and a new head coach who's calling plays in the 12s, going to be revved up. If there's any type of success offensively for Seattle in this game, I mean, this could be a tight game, and you can get to 12.5 points with a teaser there with Seattle. So, I mean, that's appealing from a home field advantage standpoint.
All of our pro tips, by the way, vsin.com/pro tips, which we have every single hour on the network, sorted out by the sports, by the show as well. So you can see all of our different pro tips that we have on offer for you. So you're looking, so you feel pretty confident, Ravens and Niners down to about a point there on a respective teaser. But if you look at some of these other spots that would match the whole Stanford Wong theory, where you're crossing through, if you're a home underdog of, let's say, under 3 points, you're taking a dog up through the 3 and through the 7. That can apply for both home and road dogs. The only spots where that does not apply is if it's a road favorite, technically going down through the 7 and the 3. If you're taking the big road favorites down, home favorites, that does apply to. You know, the one that keeps sticking out to me, you might laugh at me for saying this, but you have Cleveland here as a 2.5-point road dog in Carolina, where every single roster comparison point points to Cleveland being like not the better team, but the significantly better team. Granted, you have a pretty significant advantage if you're Baker Mayfield on the Carolina side, albeit making his debut off a pretty shortened training camp preseason stretch against a backup in Jacoby Brissett here starting the season for Cleveland. But we've seen a lot of movement come to Carolina now, up to 2, 2.5, pretty much market wide. I'm not really sold on let's just stating the obvious here, like we think it's a huge Baker Mayfield revenge game. Is that really worth a move of 2 points in the market? And at least in a teaser position, you now put Cleveland in a prime spot to go up through the 3 and the 7.
Yeah, I mean, can Brissett be a robot, though? And can he be an effective robot? Because that's what Stefanski wants. And so Stefanski as a play caller, can he get that going? I mean, I think the Cleveland Browns could be challenged. You mentioned roster, and I agree with you, but key positions on the roster for Cleveland are compromised. The center position, I know they're...
That's fair,
But he's surrounded by two great, great guards, though. And then, you know, the quarterback. And so you have the combination quarterback center and the communications that's going to be needed against a Matt Rhule defense or Carolina Panthers defense, which will give them a lot of looks. I think the secondary could be improved, too, making it tougher to throw the ball with Brissett with some tight windows. It's a challenging situation right now, and I think it's a big reveal, too, for the Cleveland Browns. I stayed away from the game. You know, Carolina and Baker kind of – I think the Panthers are kind of catering towards Baker and what he wants from a personnel standpoint. I think they're going to be highly creative, Josh. I mean, excuse me, Ben, and I just had Josh Applebaum on.
Of course. Former BAA guys.
Yeah, I know, right? Old habits there. But, no, I think they're going to be highly creative out there offensively with Ben McAdoo, which is crazy to think about.
That's what I'm like. I'm not sold. Like we,
you're not
last
sold,
time we saw
I'm
Ben McAdoo calling plays, it was a complete disaster.
Right.
And that's my point. To just say blindly, it's Baker Mayfield. He really, really wants to beat his former team. Well, no. Duh.
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants that.
And you know Cleveland is thinking about that on the same side. I just think about Cleveland, who has a top five defensive backfield room. And you think about Carolina, even with Ike Ekwonu, who's going to be starting as a rookie at left tackle. We think that offensive line should be much better, but it was bottom five in basically every metric a season ago. So how much of a jump can you really expect, especially right away?
Right.
You're also asking a consensus bottom 10 defensive line group to, while you mentioned the center issues and Nick Harris was put on IR, their presumed starting center, you're still asking a bottom 10 defensive line to essentially negate even with the injuries, a top 10 offensive line, arguably the best running back room in the National Football League. You're asking that to play out over 60 minutes and giving Carolina a 2.5-point edge. That's why I just don't see it. And at the very least, this profiles as, based on game flow and script, when you combine those two things, a very, very tightly played one-score game where if you're getting me Cleveland up to 8.5, I'll take that every day.
Okay, and then you have an opportunity, too, with New England as Bill Belichick against rookie head coaches. And then certainly the quarterback situation there. I mean, you got 3.5 points. You can tease that one up, too, if you like that play.
I know you had New England circled in the preseason, I should say offseason, then the preseason happened.
Man.
It's been all negative storylines coming out.
Yep.
When you get preseasons like that in New England, where it's like every single story, it's Mac Jones can't throw the ball. He's got no time. The offense looked horrible. Did you ever put any stock into that when you were in the actual locker room and you heard all the noise from the media? Like, you're still 0-0. You still haven't played any games. How worried are you actually in New England?
No, not worried. I mean, you're going to be confident in what you do. And Mac Jones had mentioned that. Real quick, though, the line movement with Arizona. So JJ Watt,
we're up to six now.
Yeah, we're up to six now. JJ Watt's got an illness, questionable. Rondale Moore, wide receiver, undisclosed situation from an injury standpoint.
Zach Ertz and already questionable. The center for Arizona already questionable as well. Right. Roddy Hudson. That could easily touch seven.
Well, JJ Watt with the illness, though. I mean, that could be anything.
Just based on the one-way nature of the betting so far for Kansas City. Yeah. You got your eye on that one, too. You laying it with Kansas City?
No, it's up to six now. It was 3.5 a week ago when we did the show.
The discipline of Mike Prickley. Right. He's a principled man. He's not going to bet a game that's moved 3.5 points, which I appreciate. Blast with working with you, always. We'll be back with Michael Lombardi tomorrow on the Lombardi lineup. Next, though, it's VSiN Big Bets. Dave Ross, Amal Shaw, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.